Hello, this is Tom Scott with the Ford County Chronicle for Wednesday, January 7th, 2026. We begin on the front page with an article about the Criss Rural Mass Transit District. Shortly after expanding into Ford County, Criss RMTD shuts down. Danville. Like many others, Ford County board members were blindsided by Friday's news that the Criss Rural Mass Transit District would be ceasing operations effective immediately, just a half a year after it expanded its services into their county. This caught all stakeholders off guard, and we are currently attempting to learn more, the board's chairman, Chase McCall of Gibson City, said Friday in a text message to the Chronicle. The news of the Criss RMTD's dissolution was announced in a news release late Friday morning. It was only 6 months earlier when Criss began providing on-demand rides to residents of Ford County under a one-year contract made possible by an intergovernmental agreement between Ford, Iroquois, and Livingston counties. Ford County board members are already working to fill the unexpected void. Cindy Erkey and Tim Nuss, Ford County's representatives for the Tri-County Rural Transit Board, are working on the next steps, McCall said. We will wait for their guidance as we move forward with alternative options. Based in Danville and previously serving just Vermilion County, Criss began providing shared ride transportation services in Ford County last July and Iroquois County last fall. Before the expansion, Criss's fleet of buses and vans gave an estimated 60,000 rides and traveled 362,000 miles in Vermilion County alone during the previous year, its former chief executive officer, Melissa Walters, said last summer. In a news release posted on social media Friday, Criss announced that effective at 6:30 that evening, it would no longer be offering rides in Vermilion, Ford, and Iroquois County, due to a decision by the Illinois Department of Transportation to freeze our funds. Criss Rural Mass Transit cannot continue to operate, the news release said. We are very sorry for this inconvenience and wish our riders well. Carol Timms, Criss's interim chief executive officer, said in a phone interview Friday afternoon that the decision was made at a meeting of the agency's board of directors that morning. The meeting was called after Criss received a letter from IDOT the previous Friday, December 26th, stating that IDOT had decided to cut off all our funding until a forensic audit is completed of Criss's finances. The problem was that it could take months, and we don't have any funds, Tim said. We haven't received a payment now since July. A forensic audit would take a very long time, so without any funds, we can't continue to provide services. An IDOT representative attended Friday morning's board meeting via phone, Tim said, but IDOT appeared unwilling to negotiate. We tried to negotiate, Tim said. We tried everything we could think of. We tried to see if we could reduce expenses, but we operate on a shoestring budget. We couldn't get them to budge, so we had to close. Several weeks earlier, a separate letter from IDOT was sent to the Vermilion County Board Chairman, Steve Miller, regarding IDOT's completion of a review of previously completed audit of Criss's operations for the period of July 1, 2022 through June 30, 2024. The November 3rd letter, signed by Jason Osborne, director of IDOT's Office of Intermodal Project Implementation, said the audit completed by the Bureau of Investigations and Compliance revealed severe deficiencies in financial management, internal controls, and governance, including ineligible items charged to grants, violations of the Open Meetings Act, insufficient payroll documentation, and a significant reliance on a line of credit. Also, the letter stated, Across three consecutive fiscal years, 2022 through 2024, only 46% of expenditures sampled contained supporting documentation, reflecting ongoing non-compliance with state and federal grant record-keeping requirements. Of particular concern is the escalating reliance on their line of credit, their LOC, said the letter, which was posted in December. On the Vermilion County Watchdog's Facebook page, between July 1, 2024 and September 25, 2025, the letter of credit debt increased from $366,228 to $819,678, more than doubling, despite Chris having received a combined $1,190,611 in Downstate Operating Assistance Program and Federal Section 5311 reimbursements during the same period. Despite repeated opportunities for corrective actions and months of technical assistance, Chris RMTD continues to fail to demonstrate the fiscal and administrative capacities required to serve as a direct recipient of state and federal transit assistance, the letter continued. Recently, Chris's RMTD's financial institution submitted a letter expressing support for the agency's intent to contract with an external accounting firm, and the Chris board has also requested that such an arrangement be approved. While this demonstrates an awareness of internal weaknesses, it further underscores IDOT's concern that Chris does not currently possess the administrative or financial management capacity required of a direct recipient of state and federal transit funds. The reliance on external parties to perform core fiscal oversight functions reflects the lack of internal controls and continuity that are fundamental to sound grant administration. On Friday, Chris Timms said Chris was actively working to correct the accounting issues, but IDOT didn't give us enough time. We hired an accounting firm to help us resolve all this, Tim said, but they just started. And then we got the December 26th letter from IDOT, and they wouldn't budge. In August 2024, the Chris Rural Mass Transit District, then serving only rural residents of Vermilion County, first approached the Ford County Board about the agency's interest in expanding its services into Ford County to fulfill the public transportation needs of its communities, especially its elderly and disabled populations who need a way to get to their doctor's appointments, the grocery store, or to the bank, for example. Not even a year later, last July, the expansion became official. The Iroquois County Board then followed suit last fall, signing its own contract with Chris. According to Tim, Chris's public transportation services will be terribly missed. Tim noted that services have been used regularly by a lot of people, including those who have dialysis appointments twice a week, who now won't have a way to get there. That's life-threatening, Tim said. We mentioned that to IDOT. They know it, and we have people who are differently abled who we take to work, and that's going to make a huge impact on them. Chris's clients were disappointed to learn that Chris would be shut down. I heard dispatch staff talking to some folks because we had to call some people and cancel their rides for tomorrow. And people were calling in to schedule rides, and I heard them talking, and everybody sounded very disappointed to me, Tim said. Chris has been around for about 30 years, so people rely on us. This is an on-demand service. It's not a route. It's on-demand. So people would call in and schedule rides, and we'd go to their homes to pick them up. So it was very valuable to them. We carry about 325 people every day, 6 days a week. Friday's news release said clients who have paid in advance for rides will be reimbursed. Chris also noted there are alternative transportation services for the area listed at www.ruraltransit.org. CRIS's 30 or so employees, including its 19 drivers, were informed Friday morning that they no longer had a job. A message sent by management to staff Friday was obtained by Alex Severance, who operates the Vermilion County Watchdog Facebook page. "Please know that this decision was not made lightly," the message said. "We have made every good faith effort to keep CRIS operational and compliant. However, due to ongoing regulatory requirements and constraints from IDOT, continuing operations is no longer feasible. All earned and unused paid time off will be paid out in accordance with policy and applicable law. We recognize the impact this has on each of you and want to thank you sincerely for your dedication, professionalism, and service to the community. Your work has mattered, and we are grateful for the effort you have given during this difficult time." Tim said IDOT indicated during Friday's board meeting that it doesn't have a plan right now to fill the void the closure has created. "But I expect they will work to come up with a plan for those who will preserve the service in this area," Tim said, "because we can't let three counties be without transportation. We can't let people go months without dialysis. They just can't. I mean, it breaks my heart." Tim said IDOT officials plan to visit CRIS's facilities in Danville on Monday, January 5th, to take inventory of its fleet of vehicles. "It's their equipment," Tim's noted. "We both are on the title, but they have the ultimate authority over them. So they'll take inventory and check out their buses." As for the agency's remaining funds on hand, Tim said, "There's very little. That's why we had to make this decision," Tim said. "If we had a lot of money sitting in the bank, we would keep going because we don't want to leave our ridership high and dry." Tim's, who previously worked at For Health Alliance, said she began working as interim CEO at CRIS about 3 months ago, after Walters, the agency's former CEO, offered her the job. In December, Walters confirmed to the Chronicle that she was resigning to take another job and said her last day in the office at CRIS was to be December 19th. Walters declined to comment on CRIS's dissolution, referring questions to Tim's. Last month, Walters noted that IDOT's previous audit of CRIS's operations was not related to her work there, as they did that audit during years I wasn't even CEO. Walters, though, was actually hired as CRIS's CEO in November of 2023, about midway through the audited period, as a replacement for Nicole Dowling. Tim said Walters' new job was to start January 5th. Meanwhile, the aforementioned Erke, a county board member from rural Roberts, said she would have appreciated more of a head-up about the situation. "I'd like to know why IDOT has failed to be in communication with our county, as well as our program compliance oversight monitor with the Tri-County Transportation Group, as to what is happening, why, and how our counties are supposed to continue to offering services to our community during this upheaval," or she said in a text message. CRIS's original contract with Ford County was to run through June 30th of 2026. And back on the front page, man, 71, set fire to apartment. Resident of schoolhouse apartment now detained in Ford County Jail facing Class X felony. Paxton. An elderly Gibson City man has been arrested and charged with aggravated arson for allegedly setting fire to his apartment a day after Christmas. On Monday, December 29th, Ford County State's Attorney Andrew Killian filed one count of aggravated arson, Class X felony, against Roger D. Leisure, 71, who remains detained through trial at Ford County Jail. Leisure, who lists an address at the schoolhouse apartments at 200 North Melvin Street in Gibson City, allegedly committed an arson at his apartment building on Friday, December 26th, according to charging documents. The fire partially damaged the building and occurred while other elderly and disabled tenants of the building were inside, the documents noted. If convicted of the Class X felony, Leisure faces a mandatory sentence ranging from 6 to 30 years in prison and up to a $25,000 fine and possible restitution. Leisure, who was arraigned on Tuesday, December 30th, is due back in Ford County Circuit Court for a preliminary hearing at 2:45 p.m. Tuesday, January 27th, before Judge Matt Fitton. Leisure has indicated that he plans to hire private counsel, according to online court records. Killian filed a petition on Monday, December 29th, seeking the denial of Leisure's pretrial release. The petition noted that Leisure, quote, poses a real and present threat to the safety of others. After hearing her arguments during a pretrial detention hearing on Wednesday, December 31st, Fitton ordered the continued detainment of Leisure, who indicated that he plans to appeal the ruling. Bruce Kalal, chief of the Gibson City Fire Protection District, said firefighters from Gibson City, Sibley, and Elliott responded to a report of a fire at the schoolhouse apartments at 12:46 p.m. December 26th. Upon firefighters' arrival, the building's management directed them to the second-floor apartment where the fire occurred, as residents were evacuating. We found heavy smoke in the apartment, Kalal said. As we worked our way in, we determined that the sprinkler system had already put the fire out, so we didn't have to use any truck water or anything. The sprinkler system did its job. Luckily, the smoke was pretty well contained to that apartment, with the fire contained to the spot of origin. That apartment and an apartment below it suffered water damage from the sprinkler going off, and there was a small amount of fire damage in the second floor apartment. Because the fires appeared questionable in nature, Kalal said, the State Fire Marshal Office and Gibson City Police were called in to investigate it. The location and nature of it overall were questionable, Kalal said, declining to elaborate further. No residents, including the tenant whose apartment caught fire, were reportedly hurt. In all, an estimated 25 firefighters and 8 fire trucks responded to the scene. Meanwhile, Killian did not immediately return an email seeking additional comment on the case, while Gibson City Police Chief Adam Rosendahl was not immediately available for comment. There are a large number of obituaries in the Ford County Chronicle for January 7th, so we'll turn to them. William V. Ault III, Tolono. William Vincent Ault III, 54, of Tolono, died Monday, December 29th at the Carle Foundation Hospital in Urbana. A graveside service will be at 2 p.m. Saturday, January 10th at Grandview Memorial Gardens in Champaign. Carol Berkey, Paxton. Carol Kelly Berkey, 96, of Paxton, died at 10:10 p.m. Monday, December 29th, at his home. His wife, Minerva Jean Stalter-Berkey, died 5 days later, on Saturday, January 3rd. A joint funeral service will be held Friday, January 9th, at the Christian Life Church in Rantoul. A private family burial will follow later in the day. Memorials may be made to the Christian Life Church in Rantoul. Minerva J. Berkey, Paxton. Minerva Jean Stalter Berkey, 94, of Paxton, died at home on Saturday, January 3rd, surrounded by her family. Her husband Kelly died just 5 days earlier, on December 29th. Funeral services would be held on Friday, January 9th at the Christian Life Church in Rantoul, and a private family burial will follow later in the day. Memorials may be made to the Christian Life Church in Rantoul. Eldora L. Bonges, and that's spelled B-O-N-G-E-S, Franceville, Indiana. Eldora Louise Dory Sheeny Bonges, 100, of Franceville, Indiana, formerly of Lake Iroquois in rural Loda, died Friday, January 2nd. Funeral services were held at 10 a.m. at the Apostolic Christian Friday, January 9th, at the Apostolic Christian Church in Franceville. Graveside services will be held at 2:30 p.m. Friday, January 9th, at Pine Ridge Cemetery in Loda, and that is at 2:30 p.m. Eastern Time, which would be 1:30 p.m. in Illinois. Memorial contributions may be given to the Apostolic Christian World Relief Haiti Fund, the Loving Shepherd Ministries Haiti Fund, or the Parkview Haven in Franceville, Franceville, Indiana. Margaret M. Earing, Kempton. Margaret M. Earing, 98, of Kempton, died Saturday, December 27th, at her residence. Funeral services were held Friday, January 2nd, at the Kempton United Methodist Church, with the Reverend Deb Honiger officiating. Burial followed the funeral service in the Broughton Township Cemetery. Memorials may be made to the family wishes. Christine T. Eklor, Byron. Christine T. Eklor, 103, of Byron, formerly of Rantoul and Urbana, sister of a Buckley resident, died at 6:04 a.m. Saturday, January 3rd, at Neighbors Health Corps Health Care in Byron. A private burial will be held in Maplewood Cemetery, Rantoul. Memorials may be made to an organization of the donor's choice. Russell Allen Gully, Choctaw, Oklahoma. Russell Allen Gully, 65, of Choctaw, Oklahoma, a native of Paxton, died Saturday, December 20th. Roger D. Huppert, Gibson City. Roger Dwayne Huppert, 94, of Gibson City, died at 2:34 a.m. Saturday, December 27th, at the Gibson Area Hospital Annex after a long illness. Visitation will be from 9 to 10 a.m. Saturday, January 10th, at Our Lady of Lourdes Catholic Church in Gibson City. A rosary will be recited at 10:15 a.m., followed by a funeral mass at 11 a.m. Burial will be in Drummer Township Cemetery in Gibson City. Memorials contributions may be made to Our Lady of Lourdes Catholic Church or to the American Cancer Society. Janice Jensen, Piper City. Janice Jensen, 87, of Piper City, died at 6:47 p.m. Monday, December 29th, at Carle Foundation Hospital in Urbana. Funeral services were held Monday, January 5th at St. Paul's Lutheran Church in Chatsworth, with the Reverend Richard Likeness officiating. Burial was in the Chatsworth Township Cemetery. In lieu of flowers, memorials may be made to St. Paul's Lutheran Church in Chatsworth or to the Chatsworth American Legion Post. Jeffrey D. Maurer, and that's spelled M-A-U-R-E-R. Cisna Park. Jeffrey Dean Maurer, 71, of Cisna Park, died Tuesday, December 30th at Carle Foundation Hospital in Urbana. Funeral services were held Thursday, January 8th at the Christian Bible Church in Cisna Park. Burial followed in the Cisna Park Cemetery. In lieu of flowers, memorials can be made to Cisna Park Athletics, the Cisna Park Educational Foundation, or St. Jude's Children's Research Hospital. Marilyn J. Perkins, Gibson City. Marilyn J. Perkins, 91, of Gibson City, died Sunday, December 28th at Goldwater Care in Gibson City. A private family burial will be held at Drummer Township Cemetery in Gibson City. Memorial contributions may be made to a charity of the donor's choice. Gerald Pruitt, Paxton. Gerald Pruitt, 84, of Paxton, died Thursday, January 1st at Carl Foundation Hospital in Urbana. Private services will be held. Memorials may be directed to his family. Barbara J. Strickland, Gibson City. Barbara Jean Strickland, 80, of Gibson City, died Wednesday, December 31st, in Gibson City with her family by her side. Private graveside services will be held at Dittany Ridge Cemetery in Norris City, Illinois. Memorials may be made in her name to St. Jude Children's Research Hospital. We return to the news with some business comings and goings. First, new cafe to open in Buckley on January 12th. Heather Dinkins plans to open a new cafe, Heather's Kitchen, on Monday, January 12th at the former Cindy's Roadside Cafe at 310 South Railroad Avenue in Buckley. The new cafe will be open from 5 a.m. to 2 p.m. Monday through Friday. Citing a need for some medical maintenance, Cindy and Ron Thielman closed Cindy's Roadside Cafe on Wednesday, December 31st, after not even a full year in business. The rural Danforth couple previously owned and operated the popular Buckley Market and Deli on the village's north edge before they spent 13 years running the Happy Days Diner in Roberts. We have had great success and support the Buckley area and hope someone will continue our legacy here, the Thielman said last month. 65 years ago, the Christie Motel and Restaurant held its grand opening at the location in Buckley on US 45, just after the restaurant motel building was built. Since that January 1960 date, the front portion of the building has always been used as a restaurant, with the back area used as either a motel or apartments. Prior to Cindy's Roadside Cafe moving in, the restaurant was the home of the Wildfire Pizza and Grill until its closure in 2024. And from Gibson City, Tea and Grounds announces it'll close on January 10th in Gibson City. Tea and Grounds announced that it will close its coffee shop at 120 West 19th Street in Gibson City after 6 years in business there. It has been our privilege to serve the tea and coffee to this community and provide employment for dozens of employees over the years, an announcement on the business's Facebook page said. Unfortunately, family medical challenges prevent us from adapting to current economic and staffing challenges, so we have made the difficult decision to close. Regular hours will continue this week, with the shop's last day being Saturday, January 10th. Although we hope to have seasonal openings and tea parties in the future, a full reopening would require new ownership, the announcement said. Thank you for understanding. Gift cards can be redeemed this week, the announcement said. To request reimbursement for the remaining balances on gift cards purchased in the last 90 days, please email teaandgroundsllc@gmail.com. And that's all the time we have for this week's reading of the Ford County Chronicle. This is Tom Scott. I look forward to reading with you again very soon.